Blog Talk Radio.
The Real Deal, No BS Talk Show with Queen Akaya. We eliminate falsehood, speak truth, bring about black consciousness, unity, and self-sufficiency. It's the Real Deal, No BS Talk Show.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here. As many of you know, last March, when it was announced that I was no longer in the black Muslim movement, it was pointed out that it was my intention to work among the 22 million non-Muslim Afro-Americans and to try and form some type of organization or create a situation where the young people, our young people, the students and others, could study the problems of our people for a period of time and then come up with a new analysis and give us some new ideas and some new suggestions as to how to approach a problem that too many other people had been playing around with for too long. And that we would have some kind of meeting and determine at a later date whether to form a black nationalist party or a black nationalist army. There have been many of our people across the country from all walks of life who have taken it upon themselves to try and pool their ideas and to come up with some kind of solution to the problem that confronts all of our people. And tonight we are here to try and get an understanding of what it is they've come up with. Also, recently, when I was blessed to make a trip or a pilgrimage, a religious pilgrimage to the holy city of Mecca, where I met many people from all over the world, plus spent many weeks in Africa trying to broaden my own scope and get more of an open mind to look at the problem as it actually is, one of the things that I realized, and I realized this even before going over there, was that our African brothers have gained their independence faster than you and I here in America have. They've also gained recognition and respect as human beings much faster than you and I. Just 10 years ago on the African continent, our people were colonized. They were suffering all forms of colonization, oppression, exploitation, degradation, humiliation, discrimination, and every other kind of agent. And in a short time, they have gained more independence, more recognition, more respect as human beings than you and I have. And you and I live in a country which is supposed to be the citadel of education, freedom, justice, democracy, and all of those other pretty sounding words. So it was our intention to try and find out what was our African brothers doing to get results so that you and I could study what they had done and perhaps gain from that study or benefit from their experiences. And my traveling over there was designed to help to find out how. One of the first things that the independent African nations did was to form an organization called the Organization of African Unity. The purpose of our Organization of Afro-American Unity, which has the same aim and objective, to fight whoever gets in our way. To bring about the complete independence of people of African descent here in the Western Hemisphere and first here in the United States and bring about the freedom of these people by any means necessary. That's our motto. The purpose of our organization is to start right here in Harlem, which has the largest concentration of people of African descent that exists anywhere on this earth. There are more Africans here in Harlem than exist in any city on the African continent, because that's what you and I are, Africans. The Charter of the United Nations, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the Constitution of the United States, and the Bill of Rights are the principles in which we believe, and that these documents, if put into practice, represent the essence of mankind's hopes and good intentions, desirous that all Afro-American people and organizations should henceforth unite so that the welfare and well-being of our people will be assured. We are resolved to reinforce the common bond of purpose between our people by submerging all of our differences and establishing non-sectarian constructive programs for human rights. We hereby present this charter, number one, the establishment. The Organization of Afro-American Unity shall include all people of African descent in the Western Hemisphere. In essence, what it is saying, instead of you and me running around here seeking allies in our struggle for freedom in the Irish neighborhood or the Jewish neighborhood or the Italian neighborhood, we need to seek some allies among people who look something like we do. And once we get their allies, it's time out for you and me to stop running away from the wolf right into the arms of the fox, looking for some kind of help. That's a drag. Number two, self-defense. Since self-preservation is the first law of nature, we assert the Afro-American's right to self-defense. The Constitution of the United States of America clearly affirms the right of every American citizen to bear arms. And, as Americans, we will not give up a single right guaranteed under the Constitution. The history of unpunished violence against our people clearly indicates that we must be prepared to defend ourselves, or we will continue to be a defenseless people at the mercy of a ruthless and violent racist mob.
Good evening, royal family. Thanks so much for tuning in. Yes, this is Queen Akaya, the real deal, no BS talk show. That's right, we're bringing it to you. You know, we look at this whole month of Black History Month, and I've been overshadowed with the whole ceasefire, what's going on in Gaza. And I wanted to make sure I brought a piece about what's going on for us. I actually caught Democracy News, and I saw Minister Malcolm X's daughter and Ben Crump and another attorney that works out of Chicago who helped Fred Hampton's family recoup some money from his senseless murder. And so they're looking at filing a lawsuit. Well, they're not looking at, they have filed a lawsuit against a New York, the FBI, the CIA, and any other of those alphabet boys. Yeah, that's right. His family is not going to take this matter sitting down, and I appreciate them so very much for doing so. So Democracy Now! Had this piece on, and they started with his Assalamu alaikum, you know, greetings to everybody there. And then he added in his enemies, you know, frenemies, as we may call them. You know, we take homage with him because this was the month he was assassinated, February the 21st, 59 years ago. And his family is still fighting for documents that they had on him, J. Edgar Hoover, the head of the FBI, for those young people that don't know. He was a cross-dresser, and he hated gays and lesbians. He mostly hated them as much as he hated black people, but he was an undercover DL. He was down low with it. I wonder how that would have got out, if that would have been known. Would he have been in the position that he is? Everybody, all the presidents were afraid of him. He had dirt on them, I guess similar to this Trump dude, got a lot of dirt on certain people where they scared to even speak against it. So they are demanding the documents to be released. Now, it's 59 years later. Surely most of the people that committed this crime against Malcolm X and against the Black Panther Party, any party that was standing up against the white supremacy and racism, that's what they're fighting for. They're fighting to get these documents and file lawsuits and receive reparations for what is so long, long overdue. So Malcolm X's family and being represented by Ben Crump and the Justice of, I think it's Justice for Chicago, Chicago Justice Office is another law firm that's representing Malcolm X's family. And looks like they're making some headway. They've already reached out and gotten okay that the mayor, Adams, out of New York City, said that he's willing to release these documents. But I'm sure they way over his pay grade, but we shall see what happens. So I think it's $100 million they're looking for in damages. I wish them the best of luck. This might be a door that would open up for a lot of us. But anyway, this one organization actually got money for Fred Hampton's family. So when we look at Martin Luther King's family, I believe they got paid on some of these cases where they killed him in a hospital, not actually on the balcony, as we all thought that they did. No, he made it to the hospital, and then they suffocated Dr. King. So we were listening to early Brother Malcolm X as he was talking to his people back in 1964. It's amazing how what he's saying today, police brutality, is still going on today. Nothing has really changed. It seems like we might have made some strides in one area, but it seems like we've fallen back in other areas. So I wanted to spend today's show listening to Malcolm X as he explained what he was fighting for, what he thought needed to happen next. You know, are we at a standstill, a crossroads, where we're too afraid to continue to fight this fight, or we're not willing to give up? I'm sure. Not the way we've been protesting in the streets. What's really going on? And then we look at what's going on in Gaza, and we look at what's going on in Sudan. It's a crying shame that we have to, I guess it's all back to what Neely Fuller says, if you don't understand white supremacy and racism, everything you do know, well, you will question it. And so I guess that's what I'm doing. I'm questioning everything because it just seems like it's so, so unfair. How long are we supposed to suffer? How long do we have to pretend everything is okay and it's not? When will things change? I guess when we make them change. And I think we've tried so much with the peace, you know, let's be peaceful, let's be loving, let's be kind, you know, let's pray about it, you know, because we don't, let's face it, we don't have the weaponry, do we? We don't have the keys to the armory, my dad used to say, but in his last piece he talked about self-preservation as the first law of nature, and that we have a right to bear arms, we have a right. But are we even really considered a U.S. citizen? Because when we saw our brothers, the Black Panther Party, that was armed to the teeth and ran up into, I believe that was in San Francisco, they ran up into the courtroom with their weapons. Baby, we see how quick they galvanized that and tried to get rid of those brothers right on the bat. But at any rate, we have to say they did try, and we look to see what happened to them. I got one other piece that I want to play about our brother Malcolm as we take a moment of silence in honor of his life and his legacy and what he left us far too soon. So we're going to play another piece of him. I think this is what he, what the slave mind that Malcolm X was portrayed by Denzel Washington. Let me get this piece up real quick.
These are the questions you and I have to ask. How did we get this mind? You're not an American. You're an African who happens to be an American. You have to understand the difference. We didn't come over on the Nina, the Pinta, and the whatchamacallit. We didn't land on Plymouth Rock. Plymouth Rock landed on us. Landed right on top of us. Shorty, is that you, brother? Praise be to Allah. Now, this is exactly what I'm talking about, the slave mentality, the slave mind. This brother and I, we had the slave mind. We used to rob together. We used to sleep with white women. We went to prison together. Now, don't be surprised when I say we went to prison, because some of y'all still in prison right now. Prisons of your mind. Stand up, brother. Come on. Your brother's a little shy. Come on, brother, give me a hug. That's all right, brother. That's all right. Look, he still got his hair fried. That's all right, though. That's the slave mind. That's the slave mind.
One more segment I want to bring up here.
Why should the black man in America concern himself, since we've been away from the African continent for 400 years, 300-400 years? Why should we concern ourselves? What impact does what happened to them have upon us? Number one, first you have to realize that up until 1959, Africa was dominated by the colonial powers. And by the colonial powers of Europe having complete control over Africa, they projected the image of Africa negatively. They projected Africa always in a negative light. Jungles, savages, cannibals, nothing civilized. And naturally, it was so negative until it was negative to you and me. And you and I began to hate it. We didn't want anybody to tell us anything about Africa, and much less call us an African. And in hating Africa, and hating the African, we ended up even hating ourselves without even realizing it. Because you can't hate the roots of a tree and not hate the tree. You can't hate your origin and not end up hating yourself. You can't hate Africa and not hate yourself. And you show me one of these people over here who have been thoroughly brainwashed, who has a negative attitude toward Africa, and I'll show you one that has a negative attitude toward himself. You can't have a negative attitude toward yourself, a positive attitude toward yourself, and a negative attitude toward Africa at the same time. To the same degree that your attitude, that your understanding of, an attitude toward Africa becomes positive, you'll find that your understanding of and your attitude toward yourself will also become positive. And this is what the white man knows. So they very skillfully made you and me hate our African identity, our African characteristics. And you know yourself that we have been a people who hated our African characteristics. We hated our hair. We hated the shape of our nose. We wanted one of those long dog-like noses, you know. Yeah. We hated the color of our skin. Hated the blood of Africa that was in our veins. And in hating our features and our skin and our blood, why, we had to end up hating ourselves. And we hated ourselves. Our color became to us a chain. We felt that it was holding us back. Our color became to us like a prison, which we felt was keeping us confined, not letting us go this way or that way. And we felt that all of these restrictions were based solely upon our color, and the psychological reaction to that would have to be that as long as we felt imprisoned or chained or trapped by black skin, black features, and black blood, that skin and those features and that blood that was holding us back automatically had to become hateful to us. And it became hateful to us. It made us feel inferior. It made us feel inadequate. It made us feel helpless. And when we fell victim to this feeling of inadequacy or inferiority or helplessness, we turned to somebody else to show us the way. We didn't have confidence in another black man to show us the way or black people to show us the way. In those days, we didn't. We didn't think a black man could do anything but play some horn, you know, some sound, and make you happy with some songs. And in that way, but when an inferior thing, where our food, clothing, and shelter was concerned, and our education was concerned, we turned to the man. We never thought in terms of bringing these things into existence for ourselves. We never thought in terms of doing things for ourselves because we felt helpless. And what made us feel helpless was our hatred for ourselves. One of the things that made the Black Muslim movement grow was its emphasis upon things African. This was the secret to the growth of the Black Muslim movement. African blood, African origin, African culture, African ties. And you'd be surprised. We discovered that deep within the subconscious of the Black man in this country, he's still more African than he is American. He thinks that he's more American than African because the man is jiving him and the man is brainwashing him every day, telling him, you're an American, you're an American. Man, how could you think you're an American and you have never had any kind of American treat over here? You have never, never. 10 men can be sitting at a table eating, you know, dining. And I can come and sit down where they're dining. They're dining. I got a plate in front of me, but nothing is on it. Because all of us sitting at the same table are all of us diners. I'm not a diner until you let me dine. Then I become a diner. Just being at the table with others who are dining doesn't make me a diner. And this is what you got to get in your head here in this country. Just because you're in this country doesn't make you an American. And no, you got to go farther than that before you can become an American. You've got to enjoy the fruits of Americanism. And you haven't enjoyed those fruits. You've enjoyed the thorns. You've enjoyed the thistle, but you have not enjoyed the fruit. No, sir. So I point these things out, brothers and sisters, so that you and I will know the importance in 1965 of being in complete unity with each other, harmony with each other, and not letting the man maneuver us into fighting one another. I say that again that I'm not a racist. I don't believe in any form of segregation or anything like that. I'm for the brotherhood of everybody, but I don't believe in forcing brotherhood upon people who don't want it. As long as we practice brotherhood among ourselves and then others who want to practice brotherhood with us, we practice it with them also, if we're for that. But I don't think that we should run around trying to love somebody who doesn't love us. Thank you.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies.
Well, you say our friends and our enemies. I'm playing the wrong.
Never have I witnessed such sincere hospitality and overwhelming spirit of true brotherhood as it is practiced by the people of all colors and races here in the ancient Holy Land, the home of Abraham, Muhammad, and all the other prophets of the Holy Scriptures. For the past week, I have been utterly speechless and spellbound by the graciousness I see displayed all around me by people of all colors. I have been blessed to visit the holy city of Mecca. I have made my 7 circuits around the Kaaba, led by a young mutawwaf named Muhammad. I drank water from the well of Zamzam. I ran 7 times back and forth between the hills of Mount Safa and Marwa. I have prayed in the ancient city of Mina, and I have prayed on Mount Arafah. There were tens of thousands of pilgrims from all over the world. They were of all colors, from blue-eyed blondes to black-skinned Africans. But we were all participating in the same ritual, displaying a spirit of unity and brotherhood that my experiences in America had led me to believe never could exist between the white and the non-white. America needs to understand Islam, because this is the one religion that erases from its society the race problem. Throughout my travels in the Muslim world, I have met, talked to, and even eaten with people who in America would have been considered white. But the white attitude was removed from their minds by the religion of Islam. I have never before seen sincere and true brotherhood practiced by all colors together, irrespective of their color. You may be shocked by these words coming from me, but on this pilgrimage, what I have seen and experienced has forced me to rearrange much of my thought patterns previously held, and to toss aside some of my previous conclusions. This was not too difficult for me. Despite my firm convictions, I have always been a man who tries to face facts and to accept the reality of life as new experience and new knowledge unfolds it. I have always kept an open mind, which is necessary to the flexibility that must go hand in hand with every form of intelligent search for truth. During the past 11 days here in the Muslim world, I have eaten from the same plate, drunk from the same glass and slept on the same bed or on the same rug while praying to the same God with fellow Muslims whose eyes were the bluest of blue, whose hair was the blondest of blonde, and whose skin was the whitest of white. And in the words and in the actions and in the deeds of the white Muslims, I felt the same sincerity that I felt among the black African Muslims of Nigeria, Sudan, and Ghana. We were truly all the same brothers because their belief in one God had removed the white from their minds, the white from their behavior, and the white from their attitude. I could see from this that perhaps if white Americans could accept the oneness of God, then perhaps too they could accept in reality the oneness of man and cease to measure and hinder and harm others in terms of their differences in color. With racism plaguing America like an incurable cancer, the so-called Christian white American heart should be more receptive to a proven solution to such a destructive problem. Perhaps it could be in time to save America from imminent disaster, the same destruction brought upon Germany by racism that eventually destroyed the Germans themselves. Each hour here in the Holy Land enables me to have greater spiritual insight into what is happening in America between black and white. The American Negro can never be blamed for his racial animosities. He's only reacting to 400 years of the conscious racism of the American whites. But as racism leads America up the suicide path, I do believe, from the experiences that I've had with them, that the whites of the younger generation in the colleges and universities will see the handwriting on the walls, and many of them will turn to the spiritual path of truth, the only way left to America to ward off the disasters that racism inevitably must lead to. Never have I been so highly honored. Never have I been made to feel more humble and unworthy. Who would believe the blessings that have been heaped upon an American Negro? A few nights ago, a man who would be called in America a white man, a United Nations diplomat, an ambassador, a companion of kings, gave me his hotel suite, his bed. Never would I have even thought of dreaming that I would ever be the recipient of such honors, honors that in America would have been bestowed upon a king, not a Negro. All praise is due to Allah, the Lord of the worlds. Sincerely, Al-Hajj Malik Al-Shabazz.
Well spoken, wasn't it? And that's how we're going to end our show this evening. I hope that it's been enlightening to you. I hope that something here touched your heart to continue the struggle. Still continues. The fight still continues. We're far, far away from being equality, have equality. And as he says, by any means necessary, we must continue to fight and struggle and organize. Thanks so much for tuning in to the Real Deal No BS Talk Show. And we're so happy that you logged in. We did a special show today. Wanted to end out our Black History Month with our brother. And I do have one other piece that I want to do, and it's going to be a little bit later on in the week. I will have it ready for queuing. Like I said, thank you so much for spending this time with me. And I hope and pray that you have a blessed and wonderful day. You know, I think about when I made my first journey to Africa, back home, the feeling that I felt, the love that I felt, I haven't felt it since. I guess it's only when we are there in our homeland, breathing the air, you know, looking at the sun, the moon, the stars, the galaxy, walking the earth. It's so rich. Everybody smiling at you and speaking to you and calling you sister. And I didn't feel any separation, you know. But anyway, I'll talk more about my journeys to Mother Africa in the future. But I wanted to just make sure we brought a piece to honor Malcolm X today, because he really was the type of brother that definitely need to pay homage to. We pray for his family, for continued justice that they seek. I pray that this comes out to be one of the greatest judgments that ever been known, and that they receive those millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars they're looking for. Stay strong, stay blessed on it, right? Thanks so much for tuning in. We're going to end the show right here.
Thanks for checking out the show. You can follow Queen Akaya on Twitter or like her on Facebook at The Real Deal No BS Talk Show.